We continue our learning. Le'ilu Nishmas David ben Menachem Lushin Chaim Yaakov Pinchas Leo. We're in Yevamos Perik Yud Aleph Mishnah Hey Kohenes Shenis Orev Valda Valada Bivlat Shivchasa. You have a case. A child of a Kohen's wife became mixed up with her slave's child. So the Eved of a Kohen has a certain halachos, like who was able to eat truma like a Kohen, for example. But here you have a case where the Kohen's wife had a child, and the slaves and her slave also had a child. So now what do we do? One of the children has the status of an Eved of a Kohen, and one has the status of a Kohen. So Harei Elu Ochlin Betruma. So they're both able, both children can eat truma because the Kohen and the slaves are able to eat truma. And V'chokin Chelek Echad Begorin. What does it mean? Chokin Chelek, they're able to divide one portion of the Gorin. So what usually happens is that the Kohen comes to the granary where the Yisrael of the farmer is threshing the grain, and the Yisrael has to give him truma, has to give him the 2% of truma. Now, an Eved Kohen also is able to eat truma, except that an Eved Kohen cannot go to the granary to collect truma unless he's with his master, unless he's with the Adon, who is a Kohen. Why is that so? Because we're afraid that people will think, oh, if they give this guy truma, they'll think he's a real Kohen, not realizing he's the slave of a Kohen, and they may allow him to marry Jewish woman, which is forbidden to an Eved. So here, though, since we don't know which child is which is the Kohen, which is the Eved, the only way they can come to the granary is if they come both together. That way, we have the Eved and his master together, and then we can give them a portion of Truma. Vein and Metam Elamesim, these two children, one's an Eved, one's a Kohen, not knowing who's who, they can't be Tame Mace, because it's forbidden for a Kohen to come Tame Mace. Now, an Eved can, but a Kohen cannot, so Savik Doraisa L'chum, we have to be strict. They know Sim Nashim, and they're not allowed to get married. Ben Ksheros Ben Psulos. They can't marry Ksheros because maybe it's an Eved. They can't marry Psulos because maybe it's a... Because a woman who's possible, because maybe it's the Kohen. So therefore, since each of these men were uncertain whether he's a Kohen or a slave, so they can't marry anyone, since either way it would be potentially an Avera. Higdilu Hatarovos. Let's say now these boys, they become adults, so they're bar mitzvah. So here, we can have a solution to the marriage. Why? V'shichru zezeh. They emancipate one another. Now one, obviously the Kohen is supposed to be emancipating his slave, giving a get shichru. But since we don't know who's who, both write a get shichru, and each one gives a get shichru to the other. So this way, b'manashach, either way, we know that the slave has been meshuchra. Now what happens when an Eved Kohen becomes emancipated? He's a full-fledged Jew, but he's not a Kohen anymore. So what happens now? And this, in fact, is the halacha. We demand that they emancipate each other because we want them to get married. You have the Mishnah and Gittin in the fourth parak speaks about where Basil admitted to Beis Shammai that when you have a case of a Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin, where he's half slave, half free, he can't marry a Jew, can't marry a maidservant, a non-Jew. So we force the master who still has this slave, who's working for him, he's only half slave, so he's working for him 3 days a week, let's say, we have forced him to emancipate him so he can get married. So here too, v'shichru zezeh nosim. They can get married, but noshim ruyos lakuna. Since one of them is a Kohen, one of them is an emancipated slave of a Kohen who is now a Yisrael, so they can only marry women who are roi for kahuna. Can't be a grusha, can't be a zona, can't be a chalala. The Enam and Tamil Mesim, since one of them is Yisrael, would be fine. But one of them is a Kohen, so therefore they came in Tamil Mesim, because we don't know who's who. Vimni Tamu, let's say they did become Tamei, they did it on purpose. Enon Sofkin is Arbarim. They don't get Malkos. Why can't you give Malkos? Because you can't punish someone if you don't know their status and you're not sure who is the one who deserves the Malkos. They don't Ochlin Betruma, nor can they eat Truma. One of them now is not an Eved of a Kohen anymore. He's emancipated, so he has the status of Yisrael. One is a Kohen, though, but they therefore can't eat Truma since we're not sure. Vimachlu, let's say they did eat Truma. So Enon Meshalman Karen Vachomish, they don't have to pay the principal or the fifth. Normally, a non Kohen who eats Truma has to pay the owner of the truma, the principal, the Karen, plus as a penalty of a fifth. But if so here, though, A Kohen, though, doesn't have to pay anyone for eating Truma. That's not a problem. If a Kohen, though, eats the Truma of another Kohen, he has to repay the principal. He doesn't, though, have to pay, add the fifth. In our case, these men are exempt from paying that additional fifth. Why? Because you don't know he's that the non-Kohen. Maybe he's the Kohen. And Hamotzi Mechavero Olav Araya, the burden of proof is upon someone else to say, hey, you ate my Truma. Nor do they have to pay the principal. Why? Because you don't know. How do you know the Truma wasn't his? Maybe the Truma was his. Meaning, we're speaking about their Truma. So if it's their Truma, maybe it belongs to the Kohen himself. So therefore, they don't have to pay anything. Because Hamon Mechavero, Olav Haraya. Nor can they come to their threshing floor to get a portion, because only a Kohen can, and a Yisrael cannot. Remember, this is no longer an Evan. He was emancipated. So you can't give a portion, because you only know if he's definitely a Kohen. And this is Hamotzi Mechavero Haraya the other way. You have to prove to the farmer that you're a Kohen in order for him to give you a portion at the threshing floor. And you can't prove that, because you may be a Kohen, but you may be emancipated Evan. What happens? Each, let's say they grow truma themselves at their own field. So neither of them is required to give it to a Kohen, because he may be a Kohen himself, and therefore he can keep the truma. Can't eat the truma. Neither of them can eat the truma, because maybe they're non-Kohen. So this is different than that Isser against eating truma. Why? Because here, why are they allowed to sell it and keep the money? Because the halacha is they can get financial benefit from truma, a non-Kohen. They just, the only problem would be stealing. But that's not stealing, since the truma is in his possession, and no one can prove it's not his. It's another example of Hamos Mechar Olav Araya. They don't cholkim b'kodshe amikdash. What else can't they do? They can't receive, they're talking about the Bar Tanur says, kagun oros kashim, let's say the hides of the karbonos. We say about each one of them, you bring a proof that you're a Kohen, and then you can take it. So the hides of the animals that are offered as sacrifices were normally given to the Kohenim, the family of the Kohen and the Mishmar of that week. Too bad. These guys can't get it, because how do you know? We don't know they're Kohenim. So how much of a Raya? Bring your proof you're a Kohen, then we'll give it to you. And therefore, obviously, they can't, and therefore, they don't get any of the hides. If ain't, no stim lehem kachim. Nor do we give them Karbono, says the Baratun Lahakrif, meaning they can't be Makrif Karbonos. Non-Kohanim, Azar, is forbidden to bring to do the Avoda. So they can do Shrita, but he can't do the rest of the Avoda, so they can't bring the Karbonos. So we don't give them kachim to sacrifice. They motzien shelahem miyadam. Nor do we take what's theirs from them. It means if you have a bechor normally is given to a Kohen. A bechor, a firstborn male animal, is given to a kosher animal, is given to a Kohen. But here, one of them may be a Kohen, but one of them is not a Kohen. So we don't take it away from them, because hamotzi mechav l'araya, bring me a raya that I'm not a Kohen, then you can take my bechor. But maybe I'm a Kohen. On the other hand, they're not allowed to sacrifice it as a korban, because one of them is a non-Kohen. Upturin min hazroa umin halachayim min hakeva. If they have an animal, a kosher animal that belongs to Yisrael, if that's slaughtered, you give what's called matanos, the upper foreleg, that's the zroa, halachayim is the mandible, the jaw, and the lower jaw, and the stomach, the keva, one of the four stomachs, which is called the keva, is given to the Kohen as matanos. Now, this is not usher for Yisrael to eat. You can be invited to a Kohen's house when he's serving matanos and have some of this food, but it has to be given to a Kohen. But here, they're putter from giving it, because Hamotzi Mechav Araya, bring me a proof I'm not a Kohen, and then I'll give it to you. So they don't have to give it to a Kohanim, and they can eat it themselves, because even a non-Kohen is allowed to eat it. Ubechoro Yehei Roa. What if you have a Bechor of a Kohen? So he's not allowed to bring it as a Karbon, because he may not be a Kohen. So what do? We let it out to pasture, Achi Yistoyev, until it gets a mum. Once it gets a mum kavua, not a mum over, mum kavua, now it's a permanent blemish, so then the Kohen is able to eat it, and can even be eaten by a non-Kohen, and since one of these people is the Eved who's emancipated as a non-Kohen, he could eat from that bechor if it has a mum, but of course they can't bring it as a carbon. Min nostim alav chumrei kohanim And we give on these people the stringencies of a Kohen and the stringencies of a Yisrael. Now, it sounds like that was the whole topic of the Mishnah. We kind of went through several examples of that. So the Gemara assumes that this comes to include another example, and that is a Korban Mincha. Korban Mincha that someone donates to the Beis HaMikdash, though a non-Kohen's Korban Mincha is divided into two portions. What do? We take a Kometz with the middle three fingers out, and we put that on, burn on the Mizbeach, and the remainder is eaten by the Kohanim, but a Kohen's Mincha is not divided at all. We don't have a Kometz, whatever, taken off. No, the whole thing is burnt. On the Mizbeach, it's Kalil, it's completely burnt on the Mizbeach. So if you have a questionable Kohen's donated Korban Mincha, so what do? So the Kohen who's doing the Avodah can't take off more than a Kometz to put on the Mizbeach, because maybe the donor is a non-Kohen, and you're not allowed to put on the Mizbeach things that are not required by the Torah. So that's a Chumrah that applies to Yisrael. We apply to this. Don't put more than a Kometz on there. On the other hand, the remainder of the of this questionable Kohen's Korban Mincha cannot be eaten, but it has to be burnt. Now, where is it burnt? It's burnt off of the Mizbeach. You can't put it on the Mizbeach because maybe it's really of a Yisrael, and it shouldn't be placed on the Mizbeach more than the Kemitza. On the other hand, you can't eat it, so you have to burn it where? Off the Mizbeach, because the possibility is that the one who donated the Korban Mincha, this meal offering, the flour offering, is a Kohen, and therefore that's a Chumrah that applies to a Kohen that we applies to this Korban. Perek Yud Aleph, Mishnah Vav. Mishalo Shah Sa'achar Ba'alo Shlosha Chadashim Vinises. Halacha is, we learn in the fourth Perek, Midrabanan, that a woman should not be remarrying someone else after she's divorced or widowed within 3 months. Why? We need to know whether or not, who's the father of the child. It could be that the child is born and is a 7th-month child of the new husband, or maybe it's a 9-month-old child born from the first husband. So we don't know. We want to know who the father is. So here we have a case where a woman did not wait. Viyolda, and she gave birth. She realized she's pregnant soon after her remarriage. She gave birth to a boy. Ve'en yadu em ben tisha l'arishon em ben tisha l'achron. We don't know whether it's a 9-month child of the first husband or a 7-month child of the second husband. So we're going to look at the diagram here. It looks a little bit complicated. We're going to look at the first diagram on top of the page first. And here you have a case where Rachel was married to Avraham. It says their first marriage, Avram passed away, and then she married Yaakov in a second marriage, but married him within 3 months, something she should not have done. And Rachel gave birth to Levi, as you see there in green, but the only thing is, we're not sure if Levi, as you see there, is a suffolk, if 9 months and it's Avram's son, or it's a 7-month baby and it's Yaakov's son. So we know it's Rachel, Levi's Rachel's son, but we know if Levi is Avram's son or Yaakov's son. In addition to that, to complicate matters, Hayu la banim in harishon ubanim in hasheni. Rachel also had a son previously with Avraham. You see there, that's Reuven. And she also had a son born afterwards with Yaakov. And that son is going to be Yosef. So what happens here? Levi then marries Chana, and Levi passes away. So what do we here? Rachel, keep in mind, Reuven, Levi, and Yosef are maternal brothers. And Levi is the paternal brother of either Reuven or Yosef. You see there, wrote with case one, is the whole case. Rachel marries Avraham, has son Reuven, Avraham dies, Rachel, without waiting 3 months, marries Yaakov, then immediately she gives birth to Levi, and Rachel then gives birth to Yosef. So we see Reuven, Levi, and Yosef in C there. Reuven, Levi on the right side of the page. Reuven, Levi, and Yosef of maternal brothers. Levi is the paternal brother of either Reuven or Yosef. And now in D on the left side of the page, Reuven and Yosef do chalitza with Chana, but they do not Yibim. That's what the Mishnah means. Choltzin velo miyadmin. If Levi dies, Reuven and Yosef each do chalitza, not Yibim. Now the mitzvah of Yibim chalitza we know only applies to paternal brothers, but there's an erva problem which we know applies. Even a person can't marry his brother's wife, that applies even to maternal brothers. So we don't know if Levi's father was Avraham or Yaakov. So therefore, Chana, Levi's widow, needs chalitza from both Reuven and Yosef. Why? Because we don't know which one she has a bond with. In either of them, though, can perform Yibum. Why? Because each one has the possibility that Levi was not his paternal brother, but only a maternal brother. Well, there's no mitzvah of Yibum. Aha, there's no mitzvah of Yibum, but there is an Isser Erva of marrying your maternal brother's wife. So that's going to be a problem. So that's why there's chalitza and not Yibum with Reuven and Yosef. They do chalitza with Chana, Levi's wife, but not Yibum, because we don't know if they are maternal brothers. That could be a potential erva problem, but they are not. We're not sure if they're paternal brothers, not sure if there's a mitzvah of Yibum, so we do chalitza just to cover ourselves. V'chein, same thing would be true. Let's say Reuven or Yosef died, and Levi's alive. So here, imagine that. Here you have a case where, so here we want to know what would the halakha be if Levi's alive and then Reuven and Yosef have wives. So who lahem? So too, he, regarding them, chalitza lo biyamin. Levi performs chalitza with their widows, had Reuven and Yosef been married, but not Yibam, because he doesn't know who's his paternal brother. Is Reuven his paternal brother? We're not sure if Levi was Reuven's paternal brother, or Levi was Yosef's paternal brother. So Levi performs chalitza with Reuven's wife and Yosef's wife if they got married. So again, hu lahem choletz lo miyabim. Levi has to perform chalitza with the widows of Reuven and Yosef. We don't have them in the picture here, in the top picture at least, but he performs chalitza with them. He can't perform Yibum because he doesn't know which one of them is his paternal brother and which is only the maternal brother. So therefore, chalitza is the only thing that you do. So that's v'chein hu lahem choletz v'lo miyabim. And then the Mishnah now has the following case, which we'll find on the bottom diagram. Hayu lo achim min harishom ve'achim min hasheni shelo me'osa ha'em. Here we have a case. Rachel, as you see there in the middle, in the second diagram below, had no other sons. No other sons. The mothers. See, if you look at case one, then we wrote it's the same mother. Reuven and Yosef come from the same mother as Levi. But here it's different mothers. Rachel had only had Levi. But Avram and Yaakov, each of them had another son by a different wife. Avram was married to Sarah and had Reuven. And Yaakov had been married to Leah and had Yosef. So now here Levi is only related to one of those. He's not related to both. And not only that, is the only possible relationship he has with them, with either Reuven or Yosef, is a paternal one, since his mother Rachel is not related, because Levi is only is the only son of Rachel. And their mothers are either are Sarah, right? Reuven's mother is Sarah, and Yosef's mother is Leah. So what's the halacha here? Who choletz umiyabim? He, Levi, can perform either chalitza or yibum with the widows of Reuven and Yosef. So Reuven is married to Esther. Here we gave Reuven a wife, and here we gave Yosef a wife, Miriam. So if Levi is, why is it okay for him to perform yibum or chalitza? Because if Levi is really Avraham's son, so remember, we're not sure. Is Levi Avram's son or is he Yaakov's son? We're not sure who he is. But he is actually Avram's son. So then Reuven's almana, which is Esther, is his Yivama. And therefore, does chalitza Yibam. If Levi is not Avram's son, then he's not related to Reuven at all. Because it's not like they share a mother. He's not related at all. They're only potentially paternal connections. So therefore, if he's not related to Reuven, he's allowed to marry Reuven's widow. He's allowed to marry Esther. Shouldn't be a problem. Either it's Yibum, or he's allowed to marry her. As long as there's no other surviving brother that Reuven would have, which we see here, he does not. Not only that, Levi can perform either chalitza or Yibum with Yosef's almana with Miriam for the same reason. He's either, why? why? She's either his sister-in-law or not related to him at all. So either he's performing Yibum or he's just marrying her. But there's no Arayas here because it's not his mother. They're not related. It's not like there's a mother there. It's not like Yosef is potentially his maternal brother. Veheim, and they, Echad Choleitz Ve'echa B'yamim. If Levi dies, Levi's married to Chana. So now Chana needs potential Yibam from Yosef or Reuven. So Reuven or Yosef must do the following. First perform Chalitza with Chana, and then the other one can perform Yibam. Now, why can't we start with Yibam? Let's say Reuven wants to perform Yibam with Chana. Levi dies, Reuven is wrong. Yibam with Chana is to see over there. So Reuven can start with Yibam. Why? Because Chana, the widow of Levi, may be connected to Yosef as Yosef's Yivama. We don't know. And therefore, Yosef can't start with Yibam because she may be Chana is Reuven's Yivama. But once one performs Chalitza, the second one could perform Yibam. Because either the widow is his real Yavama, or she's not related to him at all, and therefore is freed from the Yavam through Chalitza. So therefore, you see over here, in the case two, A says Reuven, Levi, and Yosef all have different mothers. In B, Reuven and Yosef are not related. C, Levi is the paternal brother of either Reuven or Yosef. D, Levi does Chalitza or Yibam with Miriam with Esther and Miriam, which what we said when if Reuven and Yosef died. And if Levi dies, Reuven or Yosef must first do Chalitza with Chana, and the other then can do Yibam.